I hear a lot of people say that the Native community needs heroes. Well, we already have our heroes. So let's just take a minute to remember them.
And any man who knows a thing knows he knows not a damn thing at all. And every time I felt the hurt and I felt the giving getting me up off the wall, I'm just gonna take a minute and let it ride. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it breeze. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it ride. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it breeze. Hallelujah.
You're listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded, and current lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
How did Juanique take a knife to the ribs then represent this country? Damn, she forgive. And how does Leonard Peltier get out of bed each day? Finding hope in the hopeless, it's the Indian way. And why did Tommy Prince fight for all Canadian people when right here at home he wasn't considered an equal? Overseas he fought with the heart of a warrior, then came back home to be...
Today's show intro was by Wapkanoo. Unceded Airwaves broadcasts every week from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people, Vangwizi. My name's Autumn Schnell, and I'm Treaty 11 Gwich'in on my mom's side, and my dad's side, I'm from settler German descent. I was born and raised on the Treaty 6 territory of the Cree, Métis, Soto, Nakota Sioux, and Nakota Sioux peoples. I acknowledge that I'm an uninvited guest on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people, as well as the Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh. Thank you to the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people who host us on their land today.
Yeah, so my name is Nikita Day. I am from the Tahltan First Nation on my dad's side, and I'm of settler German descent on my mom's side. And I am now my fourth year studying here at UBC, majoring in GRSJ. And yeah, really excited for the show today.
And I'm Josh Kiyogi. I'm from the Attawapiskat First Nation in Treaty 9 territory, as well as being a settler Canadian, and I am very happy to be here with y'all.
We would like to thank our sponsors, Decolonizing Water and NORAD Electric. You're listening to Season 3, Episode 2 of Unceded Airwaves. Today we'll be talking to Melissa West Morrison about her special jean jacket project and how she is affiliated, or now she is affected as an Indigenous fashion designer in the city of Vancouver, and some exciting projects she has coming up. In the second half of today's show, we will be doing a round panel discussion about traditional regalia and the problem of cultural appropriation in today's society. But before we get into it, let's set our intention for the day today.
So we are the Indigenous Radio Collective, and every week we discuss Indigenous issues, current events, and entertainment. And we're a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students who use our weekly airtime for our own self-representation.
We strive to center Indigenous voices on our show and to build narratives that empower Indigenous people. Self-representation in the media is something that Indigenous people do not often have access to.
This show gives us the opportunity to share and define who we are as Indigenous people. Indigenous cultures are incredibly diverse, and the nuances of our diversity are not always represented in mainstream broadcast media.
It can be difficult to find positive Indigenous role models in popular media, so this show offers an opportunity to highlight some influential Indigenous people.
And if you can relate to the goals of the show and are wondering how to get involved, please just reach out to us. You can always do that on our social media. We have Facebook, Twitter. If you have a voice for decolonization, then we want to hear from you.
Everyone is welcome, and there's no experience necessary. Our weekly meeting is every Monday at 4 p.m. at CITR in the lower level of the Nest. If you want to be involved but don't want to be on air, there are plenty of other ways to participate. Just come on by.
And you can always follow the Unceded Airwaves on Facebook and Twitter. And if you're aware of a great Indigenous artist, please send us a tweet using the hashtag Unceded Music, or you can send us a Facebook message at Unceded Airwaves, and we will do our best to get it on the air. And also, if we play a song that you send us, we will even give you a shout-out on the show.
We're always looking to hear from our listeners about what you're up to, so let us know about any Indigenous artists that you're into right now, and what events you're attending or promoting. As always, we'll post a link to the podcast of this episode after the show, and we'll have our weekly Unceded Events listing to share a little later in the show.
Oh. lay me down in the shade. I won't be afraid. No, I won't. I won't be afraid. No, I won't. I won't be afraid. Lay me down in the shade.
And comic vendors will be gathering at the Goldcorp Center for the Arts on Sunday, November 5th for Broken Pencil's Canzine Vancouver Fair. The event runs from 1 to 7 and admission is free. Visit canzine.ca for more details.
TransCare BC works to enhance the coordination of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities.
They are doing this by developing gender-affirming, client-centered models of service.
Ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available.
And supporting network development to make sure trans and gender-diverse individuals, their families, and healthcare providers have access to information, resources, and support.
Check out phsa.ca to learn more about this program and lend your voice to help create an inclusive and supportive system for the trans members of our community.
Now we have our interview with Melissa Morrison about her jean jacket project from last year and her process in making that. Let's hear about what she has to say.
Gaelic Isla, hello. My name's Melissa. My traditional name is Ga'axislas. It was given to me by my auntie Gloria Webster. And it was presented to me and gifted at my uncle Bodick's potlatch of the burning of the mask. On my dad's side, I am Kokwakiwak from the Namgis Nation, which is in Alert Bay, just off of Vancouver Island. And on my mom's side, I am Chinese. Her family is from Vancouver Island as well, but their origins reach to China, specifically in Guangzhou, also known as Canton. And a little bit about myself is that I'm really passionate about creating spaces for my mixed roots backgrounds to critically engage and really work together to create moments of allyship and gesturing towards creating sustaining future Indigenous and Chinese relations. And specifically, I work with mediums of fashion, poetry, and photography. Yeah, that's a bit about me.
Great. Okay, awesome. So, as I know from being in classes and being a friend of yours, you are also involved in fashion design. So, when and how did you first get involved in doing design?
I think it was back in 2013, and I was asked to be a speaker at the BC Public Education annual conference they have, and I was asked to do a segment on what it's like to be an Aboriginal student in the public education system. And so I was really excited and nervous because it was my first public speaking event and it was for 3 hours. And so I've never spoken that long, and especially to a bunch of educators about sort of my personal experience and sort of how I thought the public education school system was running. And so the first thing I thought of was actually like, oh, what am I going to wear? And I really wanted to support an Indigenous artist and wear a dress. And then I was looking online, and but as like a struggling student, I didn't have a lot of money, and thinking about how much that sort of wearing clothing was something as way that I feel like plays into my identity as well as it gives me a form of strength. I was like really trying to struggle to find artists to work with, and then I hit to this point where I'm like, wait a minute, why don't I just design my own dress? And so it was with my mom, I got a black dress, and then I was looking at different designs of what it meant for me and sort of the areas I was in, and I just started my first year of university. I was just wrapping up, and I decided, talking with elders and learning more about the hummingbird and sort of being sort of a transformation animal. And so I was like, that's exactly sort of how it was feeling at the time, and sort of a knowledge keeper and spreading that. And so with that, my mom and I on the weekend before, we were like brushing mat and trying to sew it together. And yeah, it came through. And that's one of my first pieces of business too, because I wanted to create something that was casual, like very subtle, kind of fashion piece. And so from that, I was just like really excited to then have that strength to go into that presentation.
That's really cool. What an amazing origin story for your fashion design. I love it. So what does it mean for you to do that work too? I know that you've continued on since 2013 and you've done a variety of projects. So what informs you and inspires you in your fashion design?
I think for me, growing up as an Indigenous mixed woman, something for me, I always felt like I kind of drifted between communities and having like, I call it like 1 foot in cedar and the other in bamboo. And so I always kind of just felt like I had this really strong grounding. But then you go into school and you go into public settings, you come across with a lot of like, who are you? Where are you from? And I always felt like I had this really ambiguous identity when people approach me. And oftentimes I use like clothing and jewelry as a form of, that's the first thing when people see you. And that became more of like, sort of a grounding and sort of like my safety blanket. And so when it came to clothing and fashion, that was something that sort of like, hey, I didn't see a lot of people doing that growing up and sort of in contemporary contexts. And so that was as I started to get older, I'm like, if there isn't a space already like that, maybe I can create a space for myself. And sort of using fashion as a way to bridge community together, specifically my family. My mom's mom, she was a sewer in the factories in Vancouver growing up, and it was terrible conditions. And so my parents saved up money to get my grandma out of there, and she raised me till I was 5. And so she knew how to sew and sort of taught my mom how to do that. Unfortunately, she passed away when I was 5, so
I didn't get to know her for too long of my life, but that kind of inspired me to, and my mom, to sort of become closer and using fashion as a space to sort of just bridge those communities back together.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, so last year, let's talk about your jean jacket project. Sorry. For our listeners, last year, Melissa and I were both in a class on Indigenous geographies with Professor Sarah Hunt, and we were assigned a final project on decolonial mapping. Melissa's project was called Reimagining the World Through Ovids, Fashion Identity and Politics of the Cityscape. Can you tell us a bit about that?
For sure. So, as you said, last year I took a course with Sarah Hunt, who is an amazing community-driven, kind-hearted, and Kokwakwak scholar. And for me, growing up and living on the traditional ancestral and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples, it's been through a lot of learning and unlearning where I'm able to challenge this dichotomy of sort of Indigenous and non-Indigenous spaces and really what it means to begin to navigate through these three territories. So in this class, then we sort of begin to unpack what it really means to situate ourselves on traditional Indigenous lands wherever we go. And we had to final piece, a decolonial mapping project. And Professor Sarah Hunt knew how much I've been getting into fashion. And as I wrap up my final year this year, fashion is a passion that I really want to explore full on when I graduate. And so I give so much love and respect to her for giving me this time and this space to really sort of unpack this, bridging this idea of academia and sort of fashion and my passions together, which I think the FNIS program does an amazing job to do that. And through that time, we had to create a decolonial mapping project to represent a facet of contemporary Indigenous people's lives, issues, and concerns. And so for me, growing up as an Indigenous mixed roots individual in the city, identity and belonging have been two core themes that I've been really trying to unpack. In exploring art, I'm specifically interested, as I was mentioning before, to create a space for my Kwakwaka'wakw and Chinese relations to really critically engage and to really create moments of allyship and to gesture towards developing and sustaining future relations between these two communities. So by undertaking this project, I want to participate in this growing dialogue that really looks at ways to rethink and redefine maps and their colonial usage of dispossessing Indigenous peoples on their traditional homelands. My original interest of using a jean jacket project as a mapping site stemmed from the stories that I heard from my father growing up as he shared with me his experience as being one of the first Indigenous individuals to work at the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which is also known as CBC in Vancouver, and his journeys of meeting my mother in that space. To me, this really holds significance of value of using a jean jacket as my site of analysis, is because it not only holds memories of my father and mother first meeting, but it also powerfully symbolizes this idea of challenging and reimagining what a contemporary Indigenous person looks like, their occupation and their relations with others as they move through city-constructed spaces. Because for me, as growing up as an Indigenous mixed roots individuals, fashion was a way that I sort of used as sort of my strength and my power that I drew on as sort of my protection and my shield. Because growing up, I often felt really I had this ambiguous identity, and I really felt like I struggled with finding my space. And I often say that I have one foot in cedar and one foot in bamboo, and I'm just always trying to do a fancy dance of trying to find that balance. And so fashion became a space to be able to do that. And using this project and looking at the protocols, specifically when you approach a project or a group of people, it's always about introducing yourself. So I want to find a way that when you approach map, it's always situating yourself there. So that's how that project sort of came about. So more about the jean jacket project specifically is looking in a history where colonial legislation has violently and systematically normalized the dispossession of Indigenous peoples from their traditional homelands is my intention of using fashion as a way to recenter the Indigenous body and reclaim my own individual bodily self-determination. And that's specifically, in general, the type of work that I like to get involved with. And I was inspired by the work of Lawrence Paul's creation of Ovidism, discussed in his word and work called The Manifesto of Ovidism. And it was taken up in some of his pieces in Unceded Territories, which was exhibited at the Museum of Anthropology here at UBC. I use Lawrence's concept of Ovidism, and I put my personal take on the Ovid shape as a way to help reclaim my personal identity and to further reimagine fashion space as native space and the important role that personal embodiment plays in this process. And specifically in some of my Ovids that I designed, they have eye shapes within them as a way to distort the colonial gaze has played as a role in shaping how Indigenous peoples in Indigenous lands have been viewed legally and publicly, specifically through the role of mapping. And in the context of geography, where the traditional Western idea of what constitutes a map through sort of European legal land settlements around the world, I wanted to create a map that really reimagines the world through Ovids and a reminder how wherever you are, you're on traditional Indigenous lands. And so through this project, my intention of the jean jacket map was sort of practicing ways of how one can decolonize the traditional understanding of history recorders' use of cartography, where you put land-based practices through body sovereignty, as well as visual sovereignty, and how that kind of all forms together. I created the Ovids to make the whole world, and in some of the in the Ovids, you can see eye shapes, which is sort of a way to distort the way that Indigenous peoples around the world have been seen, because traditionally cartographers have used maps as a way to like dispossess Indigenous peoples through maps. So I'm just repositioning the eyes and the colonial gaze back on them. And so that was just kind of like a cheeky thing to throw in, I felt. And then through that, I have these white beads to create bridges, because part of my sort of mantra in life is building bridges wherever I go and creating community. And so as I did this project, it was a way that I could create dialogue and sort of a collaborative process, because that's everything that I do in art. It's really in the heart of community. And so I use the beadings as bridges. So we start with my dad's side. He's from Vancouver Island, which, like I said, was Alert Bay. And then my mom is from Canton, China. And then we start at Vancouver here. And on my dad's, his father's side is, he's English, Irish, and Scottish. So I have those representations as well. And sort of this idea of bridging communities together. So wherever you go, you always have that anchoring.
Oh, that's amazing. And so one other thing I remember from your project was how you were sort of responding to constructions of Indigenous versus non-Indigenous spaces. How did you, how was that sort of incorporated in your project?
Yeah, so my dad, I guess that goes back to the reasoning behind the jean jacket. And my dad was one of the first Indigenous peoples and man who was working at the CBC. And he worked in as a cameraman in the mailing room, and in sort of in that time frame, especially, you always, when he was growing up, you only see Indigenous peoples in a certain light. And for him being in that space, and he always wore that jacket. I had this one picture of him and always in this. And so I was using especially this jean jacket as a way to sort of distort the images of, especially, and you see in fashion and film, Indigenous peoples as more as a savage, or in very much in this light of, in a pastime way. And I feel like Indigenous peoples, and like any cultures, you're constantly evolving. And that's why the designs that I want to get involved with, it shows that you can meet multiple facets within your identity. And so I want to use especially this jean jacket, because it's like everybody, most people have a jean jacket. And so this one was a way to sort of to honor my dad and the relationship I have with him, because I used to grow up and wear all of his jean jacket growing up. And yeah, as a way to show that Indigenous peoples are everyday people as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so what about some other current or upcoming projects that we can look out for with you right now?
Well, yeah, so a project that I'm currently working on is, as I mentioned earlier, that I'm getting ready to graduate in May. So the next project I'm working on is my graduation dress. And currently I'm working, the dress that I'm going to be designing is a chunsong, which is a traditional Chinese, really, it's sort of a really tight fitted dress. And I'm hoping to make that using, supporting local silk, fabric designers here. And then, I'm going to be, incorporating in indigenous design from my family, which I'm brainstorming ideas currently onto it and sewing that on. And so currently that's what I'm working on.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah, I guess just to never be afraid. Like, I feel like for one of the reasons that inspired me to create pieces, especially subtle pieces, where I've had a lot of friends and family would be like, oh, I want to support, but I never feel like I can wear it, or maybe it's not my place. But I feel like if your heart is in the right place, and even to designers, and for if you're just getting started, like for me, I grew up as an urban native, and I felt like I'm just building my connection back to community. But I feel like if you have an open heart and an open mind, like, and your intentions are in the right place, and like, that's what counts. And I feel like if you're constantly just open to your path and your journey into communities, like the bridges will start to form. You just have to be patient with yourself.
I definitely agree with that. So thank you so much. Yeah, Melissa Morrison.
Thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
Sometimes it feels like the only thing you can count on in life is the fact that Mint Records will always have a Christmas party and always have it ridiculously early. This year, join Woolworm, Needles and Pins, Jay Arner, Supermoon, Killarissa, and Dumb at the Astoria on December 2nd for music, presents, and Christmas fun.
So you just heard Constellation Shine from Silver Jackson, and you're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
We just heard from Melissa Morrison about a special jean jacket project that she made last year for her Indigenous Geographies class. This relates very closely to our topic of regalia and cultural appropriation. Regalia is defined by dictionary.com as the emblems or insignia of royalty, especially the crown, scepter, and other ornaments used at coronation. Cultural appropriation is defined as the act of taking or using things from a culture that is not your own, especially without showing that you understand respect for this culture. This happens far too frequently with costumes around Halloween, a worldwide phenomenon, but it can also happen with literature, oral teachings, art, basically anything. We have some Indigenous collective members here to discuss their experiences with cultural appropriation. Do you want to go first and introduce yourself, Maddie?
Hi, my name is Madison Singh. I am from Northern Alberta, and I'm Cree on my mother's side, from the Mixed Cree First Nation, and I am East Indian on my father's side.
Great. Do you want to introduce yourself again, Nikita?
Yeah, so I'm Nikita. I am from the Tahltan First Nation on my dad's side, and settler German descent on my mom's side. And yeah.
Great. Josh?
My name is Josh. I'm Cree and also settler Canadian, and yeah.
Okay, cool. So what do you guys define as cultural appropriation?
I think it's probably anything where you're taking something from. I don't even know if it necessarily has to be a culture that's not your own, but taking something and using it out of context in a way that shows you don't really understand it.
Yeah.
And it's for your own benefit.
Yeah.
Like, I imagine there are probably instances where I could use something from, like, Swampy Cree cultural teachings in a way that is, like, very at odds with what those teachings actually are. And that sort of thing. Like, I'm not immune to being a cultural appropriator by any means, just because of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I definitely think it's meant for, it definitely benefits somebody more than somebody else.
Yeah, and like to me, it just means like a lack of knowledge around it. And I remember one of the teachings that I got when from Treaty 6 territory, a Cree teaching that I got was that you don't take anything that hasn't been given to you. You haven't been given permission from by an elder. So I think that's an interesting thing that I probably also culturally appropriated, and we're not immune. But how do you tackle appropriation when you see it in person?
I think it's a difficult question to answer,
yeah,
because you're like, is it your responsibility to like, yeah, invest all of this sometimes emotional effort and labor into,
mm-hmm,
defending something that should just be a thing that people don't do? Also, sometimes you're in situations where it wouldn't be necessarily safe to say something,
yeah,
as well, which is important to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Especially around Halloween, when it's like, you know, a lot of like people out in the street, maybe they're like with headdresses on, and you're just maybe like trying to take in the bus home or something. Like, that's not a situation you actually want to ingrain yourself in.
Definitely.
Because that, you're outmatched in, in just by sheer numbers of people doing that, so.
And, like, is it really my responsibility to do that? Like, who should, there's an issue with responsibility. Yeah. Who should be responsible for that? But I know that personally I tend to brush off micro-appropriation, and I know that it's wrong, but I also don't know if I should single-handedly be having to tackle that. Not saying that I'm the only one trying to tackle appropriation, but in, like, a scenario like that, you know?
It's very difficult to, like, to balance that in your own mind. Like, am I doing the right thing by not doing anything? Am I doing the right thing by, like, I don't know, putting myself out there? Mm-hmm. It helps to have a buddy, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
To have people willing to back you up.
Always have friends.
That's great advice.
Have friends. What about people who say that we're just being sensitive?
This is my huge issue with the whole thing that comes up around Halloween, is that, like, I think we've gotten to a point. I don't really think this general issue has, like, really progressed all that much, but we're at a point where, like, talking to, like, parents of kids who are in school and stuff, like, the schools give lists showing what you can and can't dress as for Halloween. And I think that's, like, the wrong approach to take, because it seems to be saying, well, try not to offend people, I guess. Whereas, like, I think the actual issue here is failing to understand what cultural appropriation is.
Yeah.
And not only what that is, but what it's part of generally. And, mm-hmm. like, what is it saying about who gets to speak on behalf of Indigenous people and get to say what Indigenous people are or can do, and that sort of thing. Why is it that it's just about trying not to step on any toes, and, like, people immediately get defensive about that sort of thing. Like, why can't my daughter dress like Pocahontas and Moana? She wants to be, like, her heroes and that sort of thing. And then, like, it doesn't get into the granted, like, it's very hard to explain to a kid the vast intricacies of, like, you know, what cultural imperialism and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But you can, like, six-year-olds understand, don't hurt somebody's feelings. People are upset about this.
Yeah.
Do something else.
And you're allowed to have heroes, but that doesn't mean that you are the hero.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And also there's a thing where sensitivity is still an issue, because there are things happening, like, at the University of Alberta, the pumpkin with the feathers sticking out of it. Have you all heard of it? Briefly at all?
I heard about it. It seemed to be, like, a deliberately, like, placed near, I think it was placed near, like, where the Native Studies faculty is, as a message, and, like, of, like, this is what we think about you, I guess, and whether it was, like, students or whoever, but, you know, I'm sure the rationale in the mainstream public is, like, those are bad eggs, but when that's where we're at, I guess, like, the, even just taking that into consideration, like, you know, Indigenous people are having this hurled at them in a way that's deliberately malicious.
Yeah.
So maybe think again about, you know, putting your 5-year-old the headdress and sending them out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is where the discourse is at.
Yeah.
If you want to put it that way.
Like, there are still problems and you're still offending people, so we still need to be talking about this, I guess, unfortunately. Yeah, and I know that Halloween particularly is a huge problem, but what other types of appropriation do you see on a regular basis?
Yeah, so during high school, a lot of my grad class would host house parties during the week. They called it grad week, but really it was just an excuse to drink. and a lot of they would have different themes every week, and usually every year the grad class would decide or choose that they would do a Cowboys and Indians theme party. And that's super problematic, because not only are they dressing up as a stereotypical representation of Indigenous people, but they are also representing them in a very harmful way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was super problematic. And at the time, I didn't really know how to deal with it, so I didn't really speak up about it.
Mm-hmm. And again, that plays on the thing, like, who's responsibility is it to challenge an entire grad class, you know?
Yeah, I've also seen personally, like, I saw sage being sold at Urban Outfitters.
I think it's, like, impossible to talk about cultural appropriation without mentioning Urban Outfitters.
Right? Yeah. But sage made me so upset because I know it has to be, like, blessed by an elder and you're supposed to pick it and leave tobacco in its place. You're supposed to give thanks for it. And I think it's extremely unlikely that they did any of those practices. And it's upsetting to me.
I feel like a lot of the people who are, like, buying these things, they're investing, like, very little labor into actually understanding the context, the cultural context of it, because you don't have to, you know, when you're in Urban Outfitters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you see sage or, like, Navajo printed whatever.
Yeah, and then also, like, they don't acknowledge who smudges with sage, the process of smudging, what it means, what it does. And, like, there's a big problem that I've heard and noticed with white people calling it smudging. Do you have any opinions on that?
I don't know if I've heard of that. I don't know.
I read,
but maybe that's just me.
That's fair. Yeah, I read a couple articles on it. Do you just assume that someone is appropriating, or how do you, like, is there any practices that you take, or do you just kind of, is that why you brush it off oftentimes, or?
I don't know. I think, things that the indigenous aesthetic indigenous aesthetics, like, seem to come in and out of vogue for, like, you know, North American, I guess maybe, like, American and Canadian society generally, like, the mainstream folks.
Yeah.
Like, since, actually, for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, this goes back, like, hundreds of years. If you want to, like, get into it, you could probably, people have probably written, like, their master's theses about that. So that's, there's a lot going on there. But it comes in and out, and people want to hang dream catchers on their rearview mirrors and that sort of thing. It seems so, like, inane and, like, unimportant almost, like,
yeah.
Because it's treated with just, like, oh, this is what's adorning my home. It doesn't really, it's just, why do you care?
Yeah.
It's just taking another aspect of indigenous cultural identity and co-opting it for something completely different, something that's saying this is, I don't know, it's like relegating mm-hmm. indigenous people and everything to do with us to, like, a part of our heritage kind of thing.
I also think that when you do these things and you're not understanding properly where it's coming from, you run the risk of reinforcing, like, potentially harmful stereotypes about indigenous people.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah.
Yeah. And what about art? Do you guys see appropriative art regularly?
I mean, for sure. I think when you go into, like, the classic, you know, Canadian souvenir shop and things like that, you see it everywhere. And some of that is by Indigenous people, which is great. But then I think a lot of it also, you know, there's no regulations at all on, you know, anybody can.
It can be a bland prototype.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But thanks so much for your time, folks, and your insight on cultural appropriation and what that means. Yeah.
And my belly's craving, I got a shaking in my head. Feel like I'm dying, and wish I was dead. If I live till tomorrow, that'll be a long time. But I'll reel and I'll fall and I'll rise on codeine, and it's real, and it's real one more time. Well, when I was a young girl, I learned not to care. Oh, whiskey, and from it
I often did swear. My mother and father said whiskey's a curse, but the fate of their baby was a many times worse. And it's real, and it's real. Cities, stay away from the towns. Stay away from the men pushing the codeine around. Stay away from the stores where the remedy is fine. For better your pain than be caught on. And it's real, and it's real one more time. You'll forget you're a woman, you'll forget about men. Try it just once, and you'll try it again. You'll forget about life, you'll forget about. I've heeded the warning that I got when I was young. My one satisfaction, it comes when I think that I'm living my life without bending to drink. And it's real, and it's real.
Now we have unseated events. Here we highlight Indigenous relevant events that you might be interested in attending. Do you want to go first, Nikita?
Oh, yeah. So Billy Ray Belcourt is coming on November 16th, and that will be at the Friendship Center at UBC at 6:30. And Billy Ray Belcourt is a PhD student at the University of Alberta in English and Film Studies, and he's launching his book, The World is a Wound. So check it out.
And the Trans Day of Remembrance this year is taking place on November 20th at the Carnegie Community Center at 7 o'clock. That's 7 p.m. The Transgender Day of Remembrance was created to memorialize those who were killed due to anti-trans hatred or prejudice. This is relevant to us and our two-spirited family members. Indigenous peoples have a higher mortality rate than non-Indigenous Canadians, as do transgender Canadians, and many of us are two-spirited. And we need to show support and solidarity in order to decolonize and bring two-spiritedness back and welcome into our modern society.
And we also have Missing, set in Vancouver and along the Highway of Tears. This music drama is being created to give voice to the story of Canada's missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls, and to show that each and every one of these missing people is honored. I personally saw it on Sunday, and it was wonderful. Be sure to check it out before they sell out. It premiered on November 3rd, and it goes through to the 11th at 7:30 at the York Theatre in Vancouver. And then we also have an artist talk with Kelly Clifton at the Billy Reid Gallery on November 12th at 2 p.m. She is the artist behind the moving set design of Missing.
Yeah, and also From the North is happening on November 11th and 12th at the Culch at 7:30 p.m. on both days. It's a lineup of entirely northern musicians, including Quantum Tangle, who we played last week. And that's described as throat singing, hip-hop dancing, electronica-infused traditional drumming, dancing, singing, and storytelling in French, English, and Inuktitut from the North, and it will share stories of the North and how we see the world and how we are seen as Northerners.
So thanks for tuning in. Thank you to our guest, Melissa Morrison, for her explanation behind her special project. Thank you to Maddie and Nikita and Josh for being here and offering some insight and activism on cultural appropriation. And thank you to NORAD Electric in Decolonizing Water for sponsoring our show. My name's Autumn Chanel, and you're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. And we'd like to thank the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people who host us today as uninvited guests. And to finish off the show, we have a song by another Indigenous musician, and Synchronicity is coming on next.
Yeah. We haven't even been dangerous, but we on the rise. You haven't even seen nothing yet. Turn it up. Where you're up.
We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous. We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous.
We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous. We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous.
We are so indigenous, us. Fully beat is glorious, us. Grand entry is glorious, us. Drumming is victorious, us. No one can stop us, nah. No one can stop us, nah. No one can stop us, nah. No one can stop us. We make a round. You feel the sound. It's about to go down, down. You feel the sound, sound. It's about to go down, down. You feel the sound, sound. We make a round, round. It's about to go down, down. We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous. We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous.
We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous. We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous.
They say we criminal, voices are so powerful. Beauty is the visual, you can feel my lyrical. Can't lead the invisible, it is almost spiritual. Manga invisible, we are the original. No one is identical, mobilize digital. Reclaim aboriginal, resilience is on our side. Overcame genocide, time to be unified. Overcame genocide, time to be unified. We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous. We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous.
We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous. We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous.
We on the rise, it's perfect time. Tension is high on the front lines. We gotta take a stand. They try to take the land. You feel it in your core. We're the ones we've been waiting for. No one can stop us, nah. No one can stop us, nah. No one can stop us, nah. No one can stop us. We make the round. You feel the sound. It's about to go down. It's about to go down. We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous.
We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous. We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous. We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous.
We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous. We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous.